From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now. Russian President Vladimir Putin held his always interesting annual news conference in Moscow today, but he waited until after the event to drop the biggest news. He will pardon jailed oil tycoon Mikhail Khodorkovsky. That was a surprise that will free Putin's top foe and Russia's former richest man after more than a decade behind bars. In a moment, we'll hear from Khodorkovsky's son.
Putin also said today that he'll give amnesty to two jailed members of the punk band Pussy Riot and free the 30-member crew of a Greenpeace ship. And all of this appears to be an effort to ease international criticism over Russia's anti-gay laws ahead of the Winter Olympics in Sochi. And when asked about leaker Edward Snowden today being given refuge in Russia, Putin reminded reporters he supports President Obama and NSA surveillance. But our next guest says that's because Russia's surveillance programs are far worse. Edward Lucas is international editor for The Economist, a veteran Kremlin watcher. He joins us from London. And Edward, what do you make of the pardon and the amnesty granting?
Well, it was interesting that we had a rather tired-looking Mr. Putin saying nothing very new at his press conference, harping on some of these old themes of anti-Westernism, drawing some bizarre historical analogies, comparing Joseph Stalin to Oliver Cromwell, among other things. And then right at the end, just popping up this astonishing announcement that he's going to release the man who is perhaps his biggest threat, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who took Putin on full frontal attack in 2002-2003 and lost and ended up in jail. And I think Russia watchers all over the world, not only me, are trying to digest this and work out what it means.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the tone of the press conference. Others are saying the same thing. Roland Oliphant writes in the English paper The Telegraph, a deflating and uninspired performance from Vladimir Putin this year, in which he relied on old lines and shied away from controversy. There was none of the off-script fireworks that he likes to throw out, and he didn't reveal anything new on state policy until, as you said, there were these announcements at the end. What do you think is going on?
I think the big picture is, in the real world, Russia's in trouble. In the symbolic world, it's doing quite well. The growth rate is down. The attempts to diversify and modernize the economy basically haven't worked. If you remember, in previous years, there was a lot of talk about how Russia was going to become a high-tech powerhouse, nanotechnology, deals with MIT, all this sort of rah-rah talk about how Russia was going to go places. And it seems to me, from looking at this enormously long press conference, that Putin's retreating into the rather sort of familiar, bombastic, anti-Western rhetoric, which has always been there in the background, now moving more into the foreground. But he's thrown in a few sweeteners, and these include the amnesty for the Greenpeace protesters, the amnesty for Pussy Riot, and most astonishingly, the amnesty for Khodorkovsky. But I don't think it's going to change the reality. The reality is, for example, that the Sochi Olympics look set to be a bit of a disaster. We've got not just French President François Hollande not coming, German President Joachim Gauck not coming, President Obama not coming, the Moldovan president has just said he's not coming. So I think that the idea that Sochi is going to be the symbolic triumph of the Putin years, which is what he wanted, is looking terribly threadbare, and he's sort of scrabbling for things that might improve and repair his international image.
President Obama not only not coming, but sending gay athletes and gay American representatives instead.
And why shouldn't he? You know, I mean, if Putin was saying that people with red hair aren't popular in Russia because this, indeed, is true that the Russians have this sort of bizarre prejudice against red-headed people who they call Rizhi, and there's all sorts of sort of strange Russian folklore prejudices against red-haired people. And if they had a law against red-haired people, I'm sure that other countries would make a point of sending red-headed athletes to go to Sochi to prove that we don't share these bizarre prejudices. And in this case, it happens to be prejudice based on sexual orientation. And I think it's admirable that America is sending gay and lesbian athletes to Sochi. I don't think it's any of the IOC's business what the athletes do in their private lives. And it's shameful that Russia has been allowed to go, to get as far as it has with this anti-gay law.
Well, but I have to back you up. I must have missed this. When did President Putin say that Russians don't like redheads?
No, I'm just saying that there is a Russian prejudice against there is a Russian prejudice against redheads.
Isn't that something?
I don't think Putin's ever. I mean, if you Google the word Rizhi in Russian, you'll see there's all these jokes about how redhead people, and people say this dates back to the days when the Vikings first turned up in Russia, and the Russians have a sort of folk memory that redheaded people are fierce and strange and untrustworthy and loot you. And that I'm just drawing an analogy that if you had bizarrely rational prejudices against people, are no way to run a country. And you've got the I think Putin playing a deplorable role of pandering to the homophobic prejudices of his blue collar, provincial, less well educated, socially conservative base. And it's quite right that the West stands up to him on this.
We were wondering too how much Ukraine might have played into all this. It can't feel good to have the people in an ally country say, you know what, we don't want you, we want Europe.
I think it's a very tough problem for Putin that you have lots and lots of people in Ukraine, sadly not a majority or not a decisive majority, but you have people who are going onto the streets and freezing and risking being hit on the head with truncheons in favour of a free trade deal with the European Union. And there's nobody producing any authentic or credible enthusiasm for the Putin model of authoritarian crony capitalism. And I think he realises that he's losing the soft power battle in all these former Soviet, kind of, I wouldn't say satellite states, but former provinces of the Soviet Empire. And in return, what he's got is cheap gas, bribes, intimidation, economic warfare, sanctions, and so on. And that works very well in the short term, and I can see why he probably feels he's got to he's got where he wanted with President Viktor Yanukovych of Ukraine. But in the end, he's winning battles, we're winning wars.
Edward Lucas, international editor for The Economist, on today's Putin press conference in Russia. By the way, you can follow him at Edward Lucas on Twitter. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you. And if I don't speak to you again, I wish you a very happy Christmas.
Same to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And as we said, one of the big headlines out of President Putin's press conference is that he is pardoning the jailed oil tycoon Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who's been behind bars for more than 10 years. He was put in jail for tax evasion, money laundering, and stealing oil, charges he denies. His supporters say he is simply a political prisoner. Well, last month I spoke with Khodorkovsky's son, Pavel, who runs the Institute of Modern Russia in New York, and I asked him how his father was faring mentally, since at the time there was talk of a potential release in August.
What's his state of mind? What is he thinking about in the wake of August next year? And he said, I don't want to even speculate. Thinking back to 2007, right before the second set of charges were brought up against my father, we were looking forward to 2011. That's when
he was supposed to be released the first time.
Then our hopes and expectations were crushed. So he has adopted this point of view after the second verdict was handed down, that he's not going to think about his potential release because anything could change.
How often do you speak with him, and what do you talk about?
We get a chance to speak every couple of weeks. He is allowed one phone call, like every other inmate, in jail for 15 minutes on a Saturday. And he has to split this time because
it's got a lot of people to talk to.
My grandparents are back home. My family is here in the U.S., my brothers are now studying abroad, so he has to portion out the time. But we get to speak on the phone every couple of weeks.
What is your sense of what happened to him in the first place? After all these years, you've had a lot of time to think about this, but he was charged originally with tax evasion, then the later charges stealing from his own company. His defenders say this was just punishment by President Putin for challenging his power. What is your sense of what has happened over all these years?
Well, there are two main components that led to my father's arrest. First is political. Certainly the government and then and now again President Vladimir Putin were not happy with the idea that a prominent businessman is strengthening the opposition by openly financing the opposition parties. But there was also a very important economic component as well. Igor Sechin, now the head of Rosneft, back then saw this as an opportunity to strengthen the government's role in the national economy,
right,
by renationalizing one of the top companies in Russia and soon to be the world, because if you remember, Yukos was in the process of merging with Sibneft that would create one of the largest companies in the world. Then the question is really, why did my father do it? He knew perfectly well what's about to happen. He really thought that he has a good chance of defending his name and open proceedings in the court. And of course, he found out the hard way that there is no more rule of law in Russia.
What about the charges themselves?
Well, the charges in the first trial were rather complicated. You know, dealing with corporate taxation is not an easy matter. And that's why, thinking back to 2003, so many people in the Russian society and abroad were confused about the nature of the case. But this has completely changed after the second trial, because the charges in the second trial directly contradicted those in the first. Mm. You either underpay taxes or you embezzle everything. You can't be expected to pay tax on stolen property. And those charges brought up in the second trial really changed the public opinion. Public opinion is now strongly in favor of my father.
And all over the world, this case has attracted attention. What do you think about the international attention that your father's case has brought?
My father's case has come to symbolize many things that are currently wrong with the Russian government and partially with the whole direction of the country. It's not only about my father, and hasn't been about my father for a while now. It symbolizes the lack of the rule of law. It also symbolizes the course of repression that the government has taken. So I believe this is why so many people around the world are attracted to following Russian events. This gave them a glimpse of what Russia is going through right now.
When do you intend to go back to Russia next?
If my father is going to be released in August, I'm certainly going to be there to meet him when he gets out of jail.
Pavel Khodorkovsky, son of the jailed former oil tycoon Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who is being pardoned by President Putin. We spoke last month.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.